The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Our next item contains references to suicide and may not be suitable for young or vulnerable ears. Our Losing a Parent to Suicide series is supported by the Rosalind Carter Fellowship for Mental Health Journalism in Ireland in partnership with Shine. The series is produced by our senior producer and one of this year's fellows, Claire Darmody. Claire met with people who had been affected by losing a parent to suicide, and she has this report.
The loss of a parent is a deeply traumatic experience for a child or young person. It can cause significant emotional, psychological and sometimes behavioural changes. Losing a parent as a result of suicide can be considerably more complex. Danny Quigley was only 21 when his father, Colm, took his own life in 2011.
Whenever my daddy died, it was like the most destructive kind of thing imaginable. It was kind of, where do you go? What do you do? What's the point in anything? It really put me in a position where my daddy worked 40-hour weeks. He was flat out, like he did not stop. It was something that made me question a lot of things. You know, a lot of things that my daddy was doing that maybe wasn't good for his mental health, and maybe he had to just take a break from all this stuff. Maybe what my daddy needed was just someone in some form of support, you know, that came in and rescued him. I remember when my daddy died, the day of his death, like, I remember walking around the back of the house, and I was just hitting my head off a brick wall. Like I was literally, I'm not metaphorically saying that, I was hitting my head off the wall, and I couldn't feel nothing. I was just like, what? We had a black Labrador, and the Labrador was crying next to me, and it was like hell on earth. You know, it was my worst nightmare had come to me, and it was just a bad, rough period of my life. It was destructive. I just didn't see the point in anything. My mommy fell into what I would say a severe depression, and my brothers and sisters. There was a lot of mixed emotions in the house. I can only speak for myself in the sense that I just went numb to everything. I didn't feel proud or happy if I achieved anything, and at the same time, I didn't feel down and out. Because the worst thing had already happened. It was like, where do I go? What am I supposed to feel? It numbed a lot of things. Numbed for me for roughly about a year after my daddy died. There was just a limbo. It wasn't as if I was living, and it wasn't as if I was dead. It was just existing. And nothing really motivated me. Nothing. I had no goals. I had no aspirations to be anything or earn anything. I didn't want to own anything. Nothing really mattered. We lost the house. We lost pretty much everything, but it didn't matter, because at the end of the day, nothing's going to bring my daddy back. And that was the only thing that was running through my head. There's just wee things that you miss all the major moments. Like 2 weeks after my daddy died, we had both entered to do a duathlon. It was Irish Championships, and it was a duathlon Irish Championships in Burnfoot. I did the race 2 weeks after my daddy died, and I think I finished third last. It was just weird because my daddy's name was on the start list, and obviously he wasn't here to do the race, and he wasn't there to see me finish my first race. It was the occasions and stuff that really hit you. The first time I went back in the pool and swam, I was crying, and you couldn't notice, obviously, because I was crying in the pool. But there was just wee moments, my firstborn and confirmations and communions and all that carry on. And my daddy's not going to be here to witness those things, and you'd be thinking, I wish my dad was here.
Danny was a very young man when he lost his father. But what can younger children understand about the death of a parent by suicide? And how much can or should you tell them? Anne Staunton is the CEO of Rainbows Ireland, an organisation who offer peer support to children who've been bereaved.
Children, particularly younger children, don't understand death. They don't understand the finality and the permanence of death. And the word suicide for children who are only developing maybe expressive language and their brain development is at a very early stage. That word suicide, they don't understand that. But then if we go up the primary school age group a little bit, some of them do realise the implications. And I mean, a significant impact. I mean, all children, when their parent dies, they're absolutely devastated. But when they realise that this parent may have, do you know what children say? My dad my dad made himself die or my mom made himself die. And the impact of that in terms of who they are. You see, all children blame themselves on everything, on separation, on divorce, on a bereavement. They think that something they said or didn't say may have caused this, or something they did or didn't do. So that's their natural default position, which is at the very core of the work that we do in Rainbows, is trying to help them adapt and to realise that actually that's not true. So if they are taking in this situation where a parent has taken their own life, that feeling of rejection is very powerful, and abandonment. That it would probably be, why was I not loved enough? Was I not important enough? Did I not matter? And the other side of all of this in relation to that parent, because children, depending on their stage of development, they're not able to balance this out. And so it's very, very significant. And the other thing that's emerging, that parents try and protect their children with the truth, but actually, for example, in Rainbow's groups, Ireland is quite a small place. And it has happened in a group that a child has been told in a group, actually, your dad didn't die of a heart attack. He, as it were, made himself die. We can't control what comes out in a group. We try and inform parents of the risk of this. So our default position at the moment is telling a child key aspects of what happened in an age-appropriate way is communicated, so that that can be built on as that child grows and develops. And the research definitely shows children, identifies children who were told the very opposite, and in later life then find out how their parent died. This is their parent, their flesh and blood. And they really struggle then. It impinges, it almost weakens the trust that that child might have had with the other parent. And so their trust in the world is everything a lie type of thing. And it is, I have to hugely acknowledge how difficult it is for a remaining parent trying to manage all of this.
When a parent loses a partner to suicide, they are that remaining parent, and are forced to navigate solo parenting while dealing with the tragic and shocking loss of their own. June Curtin's husband John took his own life in 2013, and her daughter Amelia and son Callum lost their dad aged just 5 and 9. June told me about John.
My husband John was from a farming background, and he was a great husband and father, but unfortunately he suffered a little bit with his mental health. And back then, in 2013, I think it wasn't talked about as much, and there was a huge stigma attached to having any sort of a mental health illness or depression, I suppose. And my husband particularly found it very hard to talk. He was from, as I said, a farming background, and he didn't like to talk about how he was feeling. His whole world revolved around his children. He had a great relationship with the children. My son played a lot of sport at the time, and he would take him to all the matches. And my daughter was a set dancer, and he would always go to our competitions. Family was a huge part of his life. I knew he was struggling, but he just found it too hard to talk about it. But the night before he died, we had sat down, and he had agreed that he would get some help. I suppose he had come home from work, and we had done the usual, had dinner, he had spent time with the kids. He used to always bring a treat home to my daughter, which would be in his back pocket, and he'd be bending down, unloading the dishwasher or loading the dishwasher after dinner, and he'd say, "God, I don't think I remember to bring anything home to Amelia this evening." And she'd be saying, "Daddy, it's in your back pocket, I can see it." And the kids went to bed, and he went out for a couple of pints. He decided he would have a shower and go for a couple of pints. It was midweek. It was unusual, I suppose, that he would go out midweek. But he went for a couple of pints, and he came home, and we sat down and we were chatting. And I said to him, "Look, I know it's hard, but I think that there is help out there." And he had agreed that he would make a call the following morning. But unfortunately, I think he had his decision made that evening. He had had his shower and he had gone for his couple of pints. And when I got up the next morning, he was gone. And that there would be nothing out of the ordinary there because he was a farmer and he was a Trojan worker. So he was always gone early. But I just, do you ever wake up and just have a feeling something was amiss? And I tried to ring him and he didn't pick up. But I just knew that morning. I tried a couple of times to call him and he didn't pick up. So I phoned my brother-in-law and just said that I was a little concerned. My brother-in-law is Pat. And I said I was a little concerned about John and would he mind going to the farm just to have a look and see was everything okay, even though I knew deep down that he was gone.
June shared how she managed to explain John's death to the children and how they were impacted after the loss.
I spoke to somebody the morning my husband died. I have a great family, great support. I have one brother and one sister, and my brother brought somebody in before we told the children. And what she said was, it's important to give the kids honest, age-appropriate answers using words they understand to help them feel loved and safe. And I thought that was very good because my daughter was five, so you can't really explain to a five-year-old a death by suicide. And my son was nine and he played a lot of GAA. News travels fast in a very small community, so I knew that I had to be honest with him, but I was struggling to process it myself, never mind trying to figure out how I would tell a nine-year-old. So I waited a week before I fully explained to him how I just said his dad wasn't feeling very well and he had a lot of pain in his head, which was very true, I suppose. He was just troubled. And I waited a week and my mom said, you know, you need to tell him now before he hears it from somebody else. So I did. And it's hard for an adult to process this, never mind two small children of five and nine, and how they experience grief, I suppose, often depends on their age. And unfortunately, my son was at the wrong age. He was nine and he just couldn't cope with what happened to his dad. He felt a huge sense of rejection. You know, he felt, I suppose, that he wasn't good enough for his dad to stick around. And that, for me, was very difficult, you know. And they always say, that you hurt the people you love the most. And for my son, the only way he could express himself for a long time was in anger because he had a huge sense of rejection. I don't think he was able to process it at all, if I'm honest. It felt like a huge sense of abandonment. He couldn't talk about it, so he was burying it all the time, burying it deep down. And as I said, the only way he could express himself was lashing out, blaming everybody for everything. They were badly impacted, but as time went on for my son, things seemed to deteriorate. He just couldn't come to terms at all with what happened. And the feeling of shock and overwhelm, confusion, led to anger and resentment. You know, he resented the fact, I suppose, that I was still here and his dad wasn't. It had a profound effect on everybody in the house.
And how are Amelia and Colm doing now, June?
I think they're doing well, considering. And this is the first time in a long time I've been able to say that. As I say, my daughter is great. She has lots of friends and she has great support. And she, a bit like me, my Amelia is turning 17 next week. And her whole world revolves around her family. So she is great and she talks. My son, I suppose, finds it that little bit harder to talk. And we have become very close now. But for a long time, it was very strange. We both, I suppose, I was dealing with grief too. And I was dealing with a very troubled son and trying to help him. But we have a wonderful relationship now, I'm very proud to say. That we have a great relationship, and he does still find it very hard to talk about his dad, but he's a little bit more open now, which is good.
Stigma around suicide is sadly still a big issue. I asked Danny if he'd encountered this.
Suicide, the word itself is a conversation stopper. Like as soon as someone knows that someone's died of a suicide, it kind of puts the brakes on a conversation, and it also just can sometimes make people avoid a conversation because they just don't know what they say. They don't know. They're afraid to upset you. Whenever suicide's mentioned, it can sometimes put a massive block on talking about the person. You know, talking about the person for who they were, what they did, and what they achieved in their life. You know, their loves, their hobbies. Like it kind of just it overshadows it, and it's not fair. You know, like it should be. It's just like any other death. You know, the person's gone. It's a bad thing, but we should still be allowed to talk about them and talk about them in a positive light.
Thankfully, June thinks the stigma around talking about mental health has lessened.
People are talking much more now about their mental health, and I think people are more empathetic as well. People are more understanding that everybody struggles and nobody escapes this life without walking a step in pain. And I think everybody knows somebody impacted by a death, by suicide. And you could be standing right next to somebody and you have no idea what's going on in their lives, and the importance of being just a little bit kinder, I suppose, to people around us.
And that report from Claire Darmody. If you or someone you know has been impacted by the content of those interviews, you can contact 24-hour helplines for Pieta House on 1-800-247-247 or the Samaritans on 116-123. And the full interviews with Danny, Anne and June are available as podcasts should you want to listen to those.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.